And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this weekend, Father's Day, and the next day is Juneteenth, June 19th, which is the newest federal holiday. It's been a federal holiday since 2021, and what it celebrates is the emancipation of the slaves. It represents the celebration of the day on June 19th, 1865, when slaves in Texas were informed by the general of the Union Army, Gordon Granger, that the Civil War was over and that they had been freed because the Confederate government that had ruled over them didn't tell them that the war was over, that they had lost the war, that is, the Confederates, and that the slavery was ended.
And they never told them about the Emancipation Proclamation.
Right. So this became an unofficial holiday for years, celebrated mainly in the African-American communities, but became a national holiday, a federal holiday in 2021. So this is our third celebration of this new national holiday. And it comes at an interesting time, I think, because there's all kinds of upsurges in all kinds of new activities happening, reminding us or reinforcing for us evidence of continued oppression, whether it's against religious groups, national minorities, racial groups, immigrants, women, on every hand. Right?
Yeah. One of the alternate name of Juneteenth that's being used is Freedom Day, which is interesting. Just a couple weeks before the 4th of July. But, yeah, we're seeing all over. It's, sort of a rehashing of American history since 1865. The Civil War never went away. The South...
Well, if Santas has his way, it'll go away.
Yeah. I want to know how that's going to be taught in the schools in Florida.
Juneteenth.
Is this going to be a woke day? I mean, is somebody going to get up, one of these, Mothers for Liberty, going to get up at a school board and said, you can't teach it because my kids are going to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To learn about not only that there was slavery, but that white people lied about the emancipation for years.
Right.
About it.
In fact, the Confederates did exactly what DeSantis wants to do and has passed laws enforcing that practice in Florida. Keep people ignorant.
Yeah. I hate to use the term, but it's a whitewash of history.
Yes, exactly.
Somebody said, now we have grandparents who wanted to keep black children out of schools, stopping their grandchildren from learning about what they did. stop their grandchildren in schools learning about what they did or what occurred.
Well, that's exactly how Jim Crow prospered in the South for all those many years in the end of the 19th and literally half of the 20th century, because, among other things, the white people in the South did not know what horrors they were part of, what they had inherited, what they had not renounced. In fact, what they had been taught was that white people were the upholders of civilization. And the subhumans, the blacks among them, were trying to tear it down.
Yeah, well, they had that, that the Confederates were, heroes. that they were upholding the idea of states' rights and property and things like that, without the mention, of course, that blacks were considered to be property.
But not only considered, they were property in law.
Yeah, they were. And
By the way, women didn't have rights in the 19th century equivalent to men.
Well, I was just going to say that. You know, the 15th Amendment, which allowed former slaves and blacks to vote, was passed in 1867, but the right for women to vote didn't happen for over half a century after that.
And also, wasn't it the case women couldn't serve on juries? Women couldn't own property? Women couldn't inherit?
Right. Yeah, all of that. When you study common law, that's one of the things. The idea of dower or curtsy and who owned this and all of these things.
I mean, people today rightly look at the Taliban and at Saudi Arabia and at these other feudal backward regimes where women have no rights and say, oh, how could that be? How could that be? That's exactly how it was in this country. And
yeah,
not that long ago.
Pretty much. You know, and we still have vestiges of that, you know, the pay differences.
How about the Southern Baptists?
Yes.
The largest denomination in the country, the largest Christian denomination in the country, that just expelled its most popular pastor and his church, which has, I don't know, tens of thousands of members, because they had women pastors.
Yeah. Women can't have positions of any power.
They can't be pastors. They can't lead the church.
Right. They can't. Yes, exactly.
So how do they differ from the Taliban, these Southern Baptists?
Not much.
Not much.
Burkas, I guess. I guess burkas is the difference.
Well, but they have dress codes.
Oh, yes. Well, supposedly.
Modesty, right? Modesty.
Yeah. It's the way of a lot of religions in that regard.
Yeah.
But these folks are imposing it. Tucker Carlson plays into this and whatever. It's this masculinity issue or this fear of losing supposedly masculinity. And that goes also to the what Ruth Ben-Ghia talks about in her book, Strong Men. Notice the title, that misogyny is a key part of what they do.
But when you hook this up to religious belief, what you've got is a recipe for mass murder.
Yeah.
And in fact, we this week had the trial of the mass murderer in the Pittsburgh synagogue, convicted of murder.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he believed, that he was, you know, ridding the world of subhuman undesirables.
Yeah, and also that the founding tenet in the Declaration of Independence is that people are not equal, that some are, you know, that white males are more equal than others. And part of his fear, of course, was on immigration. And that gets into what you were just saying, that these folks from who are coming across the border are lesser humans or subhumans. And, of course, that was Donald Trump's thoughts on things right from the get-go.
But that's the basis of racism, of all racism. Whether it's racism toward national groups, racism toward so-called racial groups, racism toward religious groups, it's all different forms of the same thing. We call it racism, but it has different manifestations, not necessarily related to our definition of race. After all, nobody now believes that Jews are a race. They are now regarded either as a people or as a religion, depending on how you regard yourself as a Jew. But it's just exactly the same form of oppression as other forms of oppression based on characteristics that you have, that you're born into, but which are political targets for some group that manages to stay on top because they can turn other people's attention to you and blame other people's problems on you. After all, that's what racism had, that's how it arose in America. It was a way to keep white indentured servants and black slaves from uniting and not threatening the slave owners. And that was hardly secret. These were open debates in the Virginia legislature and in the South Carolina legislature in the late 1600s and early 1700s, where they said, listen, if we don't do this, if we don't give the white indentured servants a reason not to unite with the slaves, we can't keep the system going.
Well, and that's what's carried over. You get into, again, the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? You keep people voting against their own self-interest and supporting the folks who are ripping them off or who get all the economic benefit.
Right, but the benefit of racism and the great beauty of racism is that people become convinced that it is in their self-interest to overlook the fact that they're living worse because they've come to consider another group of people exactly situated exactly as they are in the social scheme of things as their enemies.
Yeah. Lyndon Johnson understood that. He has a quote. I don't have it handy, but as long as white people have, it's basically as long as white people have someone to look down on, they won't care as much of the fact that they don't have very much in of their own.
Well, there you have it. That's exactly that's the point. That's the whole point. And that leads to adopting that and spreading that throughout the whole of the institutions of society. That's what we call systemic racism. That's what systemic racism is.
Yeah. Well, you used the word spreading. And now we have all of these means of social media and the cable networks, particularly Fox, that are able to spread these ideas and spread them continuously. You know, just briefly go back to the Pittsburgh case. The fellow that was convicted, he was constantly posting these anti-Semitic and anti-immigrant messages for weeks before he went in and did this. His prime area was on this platform called Gab, which emanates from Lackawanna County.
Scranton.
Yeah, and the fellow who runs it has become more and more and more of a Christian nationalist, who said that Jewish people will have all the rights. All they have to do is convert to Christianity. Other than that, that they shouldn't have rights. And this is what goes on in this subculture that can do a lot of damage and a lot of injury to things. You know, we talk about Fox, or I mentioned Fox. This week they were live on the air. They were showing Joe Biden talking about something, and underneath it, their chyron read "wannabe dictator." This kind of vitriol.
Well, that's just the fact. They're just reporting the fact.
Yeah. Well, the facts. Yeah. Their own facts. Remember, Moynihan said you can have your opinions, but you don't have a right to have your own facts. But they think they do have a right to have their own
facts.
That's
right. They think they do.
And again, that circles back to DeSantis. You know, what facts are people taught?
That's right.
It's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
And by the way, there's a case to be made that from the viewpoint of Trump and the MAGATs, the Biden people might be wannabe dictators because they want to make sure that the kind of racism that Trump is trying to enforce doesn't get enforced. And that the Trumpites regard as dictatorial against them. And maybe it is. And what would be wrong with it? Why should we permit racism to rule when we know from our own history that we ourselves have lived through that racism leads inevitably to mass murder and even to genocide?
Yeah, well, we had a finding this week. The Department of Justice up in Minneapolis did a study and came out and said and exposed what the Minneapolis Police Department had been doing over the years in terms of disparate treatment between blacks and whites, who they stopped, how many of these encounters got to be physical, things like that. I think it was 6.5 times as much affected blacks as affected whites, something like that.
And they didn't say that this was the result of a few bad eggs. They said this was the way the department was run.
Right, at the top.
At the top. This was how they were trained to operate. That's what you call systematic. Not bad eggs. Derek, what's his name? Derek Chauvin, he was not a bad egg. He was a guy in good standing carrying out what he was taught to do.
And he was teaching others. Remember,
That's right.
He was in charge of
that's right.
Teaching others.
And it was not only white cops that did this, because don't forget, the ones who killed that poor guy in Minneapolis were not just white people.
Right.
There were Asian people involved.
Asian, yeah. Yeah.
And in other cities, there have been black cops involved.
Yeah.
Because when these people are trained, they're trained to be instruments of that policy. It doesn't matter whether they're black or brown or white or whatever color. If they were green and dropped from Mars, if they belong to that unit, they're trained to be loyal, efficient exponents of the policy of that unit. That's what you mean by systemic racism.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the interesting thing is this happened in Minneapolis, which is in the north. It's a Democratic city with a Democratic mayor, with a Democratic governor, with Democratic senators and Democratic attorneys general.
Which had a socialist mayor for 20 years. Zeidler. He was the mayor in the 50s and 60s.
So it's
so, and it was the stronghold of the most progressive part of Minneapolis politics for years. Didn't matter.
No, so you know, we had that that came out this week, and we'll see if anything comes of it. These things have periodically surfaced, and in a lot of ways, a lot of things aren't done.
In the meanwhile, there's a peculiar thing that's happening in politics, which this sort of points out, because there's a group of so-called centrists who are concerned that there shouldn't be an extreme candidate, although I'm not exactly sure I know how you could be extreme anti-racist. Either you're anti-racist or you're not anti-racist. So they want to find a candidate who's not an extremist. Biden, to them, is an extremist. Trump is an extremist. DeSantis is not an extremist, right? So they call themselves no labels.
Right.
You've followed them, right?
Yes. Well, they're trying to pick up on the idea that most or a great deal of Americans have divorced themselves from party labels, that the largest party label now in the United States is independent, that the two parties are hanging around 30% each, and the independent people who describe themselves in polling as independent are the largest group, about 40%. But it's somewhat misleading. It's somewhat misleading because there is no independent party. People's ideas of independence vary. There's a cohesive Republican concept, and maybe not quite as cohesive Democratic concept. But if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you know pretty much what your party stands for. You can't tell me what an independent party stands for. You know, Bernie Sanders is an independent, but he isn't the same independent as a lot of people who have left the Republican Party.
Or even Christian Sinema.
Or Christian Sinema. Yeah, Christian Sinema. Those kind of things. So, and it's also a lot of people will say, yeah, I want to vote for someone else, but when it comes down to the time on the ballot, they don't. They don't have a choice between people. That's what this new labels is trying to figure out, is if they have somebody that can. I mean, who was the last, you know, viable third party candidate? Ross Perot?
No, Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln. Yeah. Well, he's a Republican, but
they were the third party.
They were the third party. Yeah. Well, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, outpolled the William Howard Taft, but but you had Ross Perot got 19% of the vote. You had John Anderson in 1980, but you can't get any electoral votes.
Well, George Wallace got a lot of electoral votes.
George Wallace did down south.
Yeah.
That was because the Republican Party hadn't yet fully adopted the Southern strategy.
Right.
As soon as Richard Nixon did, all of that went away, and they all became Republicans.
Right. Right.
Down there. That time.
And laid the basis for the Trump Republican Party.
Yeah. That's what Stuart Stevens says in his book, that we didn't realize that it wasn't a recessive gene in our party. It became the dominant gene in our party.
Right.
And, you know, and then, well, that gets back to the Southern Baptists and the evangelicals down south and the, you know, the death of Pat Robertson, who, you know, had a lot of racism in his campaign. And when he ran for president, what was it, in 88, mm-hmm. something like that. So these things just keep popping up. There's this inherent resistance to change from things that are really negative.
Well, there's the inherent resistance to change from people who benefit from the way it is, and they don't want it to change. And they figure out ways to convince a lot of people that it's against their interest to change, even though it's for it would be in their interest to change.
Yeah, well,
but, you know, money talks.
Yeah, and that's what they found out about the new labels, is that the funding sources seem to be these wealthy Republicans on there, you know, and which is also a reason that a lot of people don't want campaign finance reform that shows where money comes from. I mean, look what happened when ProPublica came out and, you know, discovered who was funding Clarence Thomas.
Right.
These kind of things.
Talking about finding out and revealing and exposure, Dan Ellsberg died the other day.
Yep.
Dan Ellsberg was a very important figure in American politics. He was maybe the greatest whistleblower, the most consequential whistleblower. It was his revealing what were called the Pentagon Papers that really precipitated Nixon's resignation.
Yeah. There was a cascade effect there.
Yeah.
I would recommend to our listeners that they go out and find the movie The Post and watch that movie. It's a pretty good, it gives you a pretty good idea of what happened there, a recount of history. Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks, and what have you. And it, you know, like you said, Dan Ellsberg started this, and of course it drove the Nixon people crazy. They then decided that they were going to try to break the law to find out where he got his information. And remember, they invaded his psychiatrist's office, and then they
wiretapped him illegally.
Right, and then they formed the group called the Plumbers.
Right,
and of course, eventually, and at the end of the movie, you see where the Plumbers next move was Watergate.
That's right.
The same folks.
And for the same reason. They were looking to tie the Democratic Party to Ellsberg. Of course, most Democrats at the time that Ellsberg was revealing the truth supported the war in Vietnam.
Right.
But Ellsberg, who was confronted with the threat of going to prison for 60 years, didn't reveal it anyway. What he revealed was that the government officials knew from the beginning what they were doing. They lied to the American people. They distorted the facts of what was going on in Vietnam. They moved money secretly. They moved troops secretly. The whole thing was secret and a lie. That they, what they said was a lie, and they knew they couldn't win, and they knew they were losing while they were saying they were on the cusp of victory. Meanwhile, they were killing millions of people in Southeast Asia and tens of thousands of Americans. That's what he revealed. And that's what they wanted to put him in jail for. So,
I mean, it's like I said, that movie really brings that out. You know, there's a scene in there where Catherine Graham, who was the publisher of the Post, has this soiree at her house, and Robert McNamara is there. And, you know, it's sort of like you're publishing this stuff, but you're part and parcel of this group that has perpetuated what was going on. You know, a moral dilemma, so to speak, which I think was one of the big messages of that.
And you know, it also puts the kibosh on the notion that meritocracy works, that you get the most competent people and you'll get a good government. Kennedy had the most competent people.
The best and the brightest.
The best and the brightest.
Halberstam's book.
Yeah. But these were the people who lied, cheated, and lost. And no matter how smart they were, they kept doing it. Why? That's a good question. Why? Because they thought it was in the interest of the people that they were serving, mainly the corporate interests, to do it.
And look today.
Ideology, triumphs in the end. Ideology determines what you see. Your eyes don't determine what you see. Your ideology determines what your eyes see.
Well, look at all the members of the Republican Party who have these elite educations, the Harvards and the Yale people.
Yeah, Cruz.
And Cruz, Hawley, DeSantis, Vance. You go on ad nauseum.
You don't have to you don't have to point at Trump, the ignoramus. Point to Hawley and Cruz.
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's ideology, and it goes. And now we have these candidates Vivek.
Vivek Ramaswamy, another genius.
Who, you know, the STEM people, the people who deal in these things, and not the people who deal in things, you know, the ethics courses or the justice courses. They're just trained in certain ways.
What they're trained is in training to be the Eichmanns of the future.
That's,
you know, technicians. I just follow. That was my orders, and I'm efficient.
Yeah.
Help us all.
Albert Speer.
Yeah.
And those folks.
All right. That's it for this week.
Well, enjoy the federal holiday on Monday.
And you too. And we'll see you next week.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.